Green Room, Roger Wagner, Jonathan Griffith. Coming up on cut number one. Three, two, one. Hello and welcome to the Green Room. This is John Tibbetts. And come on in. And if you hear background sounds behind us, this time we're down at the Alameda Plaza. And our subject tonight, choral music. Not just any choral music, but some of the finest in choral traditions. Because my very special guest in the Green Room, Mr. Roger Wagner. With him, Jonathan Griffith, director of the Kansas City Chorale. We'll be talking all about choral music, both abroad and right here in Kansas City. Don't miss this one. We'll have some choral sounds from Mr. Wagner's recent albums as well. I'll be right back.
You want to stop this when you stop?
Just keep it
going. Keep it running?
It's fine. Okay, coming up on cut number two. Three, two, one. Hello and welcome back to the Green Room. This is John Tibbetts, and seated to my left, wreathed in some of the most pleasant-smelling pipe smoke I can imagine, is Roger Wagner, who's here in Kansas City for a concert with the Fine Arts Series at William Jewell. Welcome to Kansas City, Roger.
Well, John, I'm really happy to be here. It's my fourth visit to Kansas City in my career as a touring, and the fact that I've had such a wonderful audience. I've just gotten over the flu, so my voice is not too resonant this morning.
I thought this was maybe the newest trend in vocal stylings here in America. Some of the commentaries you made from the podium about the current state of popular music would lead me to believe this sort of voice might be the end thing.
Well, I heard quite a bit of it on the Grammy Awards just before going to the auditorium. But we had a very good concert last night. I felt very good about it.
It was a marvelous experience. We want to welcome you here down to the Alameda here in the Green Room. Also, Jonathan Griffith with the Kansas City Chorale. Jonathan, let's headline right away the fact that a very special concert is coming up before we talk to Roger about what's going on in choral music generally. Pirates of Penzance, Gilbert and Sullivan fans rejoice. When and
Absolutely.
Where?
This will be on Sunday, March 11th at 3 p.m. in the afternoon at Pembroke Country Day School, which is at 51st and State Line.
Now, I'm going to ask you, I think, to introduce to our listeners Roger Wagner, because as a choral director yourself, you must have a special kind of respect and affection for this man, and give it a shot if you would. Who is Roger Wagner? Introduce him to us.
Well, the list that would describe this gentleman would be so long that it would be very difficult to include all of it. However, I would say that he is not only nationally but internationally known throughout the world for his expertise and his musicianship. As a conductor, he has conducted not only choral groups, but also some of the leading symphonies throughout the entire world. And because of his world tours that he has taken, he is known internationally. He's also well known because of his recordings that he has done. I believe he's done over 60 recordings, is that so? And so therefore...
Which includes a Grammy winner.
Grammy
and
winner.
And 11 nominations.
And a gold record for classical records also, which is... you know, certainly a mark that not many choral directors or even conductors of any stature can claim. And Roger has really done more for the choral field than I think than any other conductor, just because he's not only done work in the choral idiom, but also in the orchestral idiom along with the choral music. And the fact that he is still touring right now and continuing the tour aspect for choral groups, and it's going close to 40 years since he's formed his chorale.
Roger, last night you said nearing 6,000 performances, correct?
Since I began at the age of 12, we've estimated that it's about that.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
What a track record.
Yes, we've done every state in the Union and most every country in Europe except a couple of the communist countries. We have been all over. Iran, Iraq.
The coronation of Queen Elizabeth.
That's right.
What was that, 1953, I believe?
Exactly.
Now, what is this about you being knighted by Pope Paul?
Yeah.
Does that mean we can call you Sir Roger, or is that a different kind of knighthood?
Well, it would be proper to do so. However, I'd rather be called just plain Roger. We were the first American choir in 26 years to sing inside of the Basilica of St. Peter's. And the Pope was brought in, and he sat on the throne and received me, the chorale and the orchestra. I had full orchestra and chorale on this tour. It's a world tour that they sent us, State Department. And they arranged this meeting, and I was knighted as a knight of the Pope in the Basilica, and I conducted for him
This is to say he only conducts now at night. Or something like that. I'm sorry.
No, but I was just wondering whether you wrote a review or not. If so, I'd like to read it. But he said, I discussed with him. I just didn't want this to be a polite thing, you know, where you say, oh, your holiness, and kneel down. But I asked him questions. He spoke French very well, so it was easy. He didn't speak English much. And I said that I thought that the cause of Roman Catholic music was tragic in America, and what should we do? And I said, I had just done Gregorian and polyphony for him. And he said, my son, do what you are doing now. But of course, the clergy in the United States went into the vernacular, and it was a big blow for me because the divine theater of the Roman Rite was, to me, a tremendous thing.
Well, and the wellsprings of choral music do come from the sacred traditions, do they not?
That's right.
And are you careful now on your programs, typically, to always include music representing that tradition?
Yes, I do. Well, see, I perform this in its natural habitat, which is a cathedral. And, of course, there's no replacing that experience. One has to live into that atmosphere, the incense and the whole thing, to be able to appreciate Holy Saturday and Easter and Good Friday. And
kind of like being in Yankee Stadium to really appreciate baseball, I guess.
That's right.
When I make a comparison like that, I do it intentionally, because to balance the popular and the so-called classical really has been a primary aim of yours over the years.
Yeah.
And let's attest now, or let's cite the sales of your record albums as an obvious fact that the public wants this.
Yes. As a matter of fact, since I got my records back from Capitol, since you know that most big companies have abandoned classical music practically, 95% comes from out of this country.
Right.
They'd prefer to spend their money on the stuff we hear of rock, you know, because it's fast and it turns over fast. They make a record and take the money and then go on. Whether it was classical music, it's a long range. So I finally got my tapes back, and we have our own company now, and we do a mail order thing on the records.
In fact, we're going to be hearing some of that music presently, and those people who really want to hear music, hang on, because we'll be getting to that shortly and telling you how you can obtain these albums. Roger, let's go back to 1946. Is this the proper starting time for the Roger Wagner Chorale and Master Chorale?
I think it is, yes.
Master Chorus, I mean?
Well, no, not the Master Chorale. The Master Chorale was not formed until 1964. The Roger Wagner Chorale was the basis of the Master Chorale. I just call it the Master Chorale because the Wagner Chorale was a profit-making, and only a Master Chorale is non-profit.
Now, at the time that you began with I believe it was a 12-member chorale, what was the precedent for a traveling choral group to make it commercially? Was that sort of thing pretty unheard of at that point?
No, you had John Finley Williamson was touring the Westminster Choir, and you had Olaf Christensen touring the St. Olaf's.
Mm-hmm. See, yeah. These are names that are relatively,
well, they were
at least
college.
They're new to me.
They weren't professionals.
Yeah.
These were all college people, but the Don Cossacks were professional. They toured, of course, I know how they handled their finances. But the thing is, the two started really touring was Robert Shaw and Roger Wagner. The two of us held up the banner of touring for 25 years.
I'm curious if the two of you have ever had a professional or private association together.
Well, his whole family was in my chorale. He's from Los Angeles.
I didn't know this.
He's from Los Angeles. Of course, he went to Pomona College, and his sister was president of my board last year.
Is that Holly?
No, Holly's dead, but Ann. Ann Shaw Price.
Well, another former member of the chorale, as I understand it, was Marilyn Horne.
Oh, yes. Oh, well, we've had...
I didn't know this.
Well, I gave George London his first job. Yeah, his first job when he was in City College. He toured with me with the Shipstead and Johnson Ice Follies. In a quartet with Byron Sullivan, I think he got $100 a quarter a week, because I did a lot of arrangements for the Shipstead, Eddie Shipstead and his skating group. And then we had Carol Neblett, who's now Metropolitan, was one of my proteges, and Jackie Horn, and we call her Jackie. She was 12 when she came in my group. such a phenomenal then.
You know, I'm beginning to wonder if there was ever a time when you did not consider this as your chosen vocation.
Well, that's what Yurok said. He said, anybody you send me, I will accept. Because he said, you know how to recognize greatness in vocal art. And I can tell immediately if somebody's got it, you know. It's a temperament and a voice together.
Does this kind of lifelong association with music, then, it's not something that just will stop? Like some people might retire from working. This is your life. There's no such thing as retirement.
That's right. And I feel the greatest satisfaction I have is in seeing from my chorale all these people grow, the stature of people like Marilyn Horner, Claudine Carlson, and all these people who have sung with me, Ted Dubman, who's in Metropolitan, was with me too. I turned him down the first time because he didn't read fast enough. But his wife Jean read well, and she said, I'll help him. The same was true of Marilyn Horn. Her sister Gloria read better than she did. But she said, I'll help her with the music.
One of the fascinating things about listening to the chorale, Roger Wagner chorale last night, was one of the encores. I think it was Oh Dear, What Can the Matter Be?
Yes.
Which was almost spoken more than it was sung, and every word came through clear as a bell.
It's a Gail Kubik arrangement. He arranged that for Bob Shaw when Shaw took the place of that fellow with the puppet, you know, the famous one, McCara.
McCarthy?
Yeah, the real big ventriloquist.
No, Bill Baird?
No.
I'm not sure. Anyway.
Anyway, he replaced him on the summer show on radio,
mm-hmm.
and Gail wrote both Oh Dear, What Can the Matter Be, and Polly Wally Doodle.
To get that precise diction requires what kind of work?
Lots.
Lots.
I think a choir is like old wine. It takes years for it to get a style and to get a sound. You just don't do it overnight.
There were members in the chorale you introduced last night, one of whom had been with you, I believe, for 40 years?
Five.
45.
Yeah, when I directed boys' choirs at a very young age. Yes, Tony Kadix. I got him in a public school when he was a little tot, because I used to audition for boys' choirs. I call it the lowest form of profession, because you have to use discipline so much, you know. I prefer directing women, but I love the sound of boys' voices in Renaissance because it's so objective and so wonderful.
You mentioned the Renaissance, your scholarship, your erudition, something that I think you probably are at pains to hide sometimes. Nonetheless, the solid academic background from which you come is in doing what to part? Marcel Dupre?
Well, I studied with Dupre for 4 years as an organist, so that was my big dream, to be the world's greatest organist. And then I found out that one day, the person I was studying called Biggs in Los Angeles, he was sick, and he asked me to take over his choir. And I took it over, and he looked at me strangely after, and he said, what are you doing trying to be a great organist? You're already a conductor. He said, you should be the world's greatest conductor someday if you keep this up.
It takes somebody else to see those things.
Yeah, well, anyway, I was very much at home, and I was a boy soprano in my father's choir. My father never could hear the tenor sticking out. I always could. When I was 10, I used to say, that tenor is killing your choir. He was so busy with the organ, he didn't.
There is so much to talk about with Roger Wagner about choral music, but I think, why don't we pause a moment and listen to the Roger Wagner Chorale, two sea shanties. Now, I believe this is from the original Capitol label. Now, Capitol has been your label, or at least...
That's right, and we've remixed them digitally, yeah. You know, yeah.
Now, what we're going to hear now is not a remix digital. We'll do that in just a bit. But first, from the original Capitol label, two sea shanties, first Shenandoah and then Aroban. And before we hear that, any remarks about sea shanties generally or anything like that, how you put them together?
Well, no, you know, we go on a project. We used to go on a project with Capitol. What are you going to do next? And then I give him an idea, then we get all the material together. Then I do all the arrangements. See, I used to sit down and arrange from morning till night. Then I had a television show called I Married Joan, which I wrote.
Yes. You were involved with?
Well, that was my show. I mean, it was. I wrote I Married Joan. I mean.
Well, you mean the voices that I heard on the...
That's
on
a Roger Wagner crowd.
That was... I didn't realize that.
Marilyn Horn calls it her do-I-do years.
Do-I-do. sounds like a Broadway musical play.
Yeah, because, you know, we did all the segues between scenes. Do I do skiddy abba doo ba doo ba.
Let's settle back now and listen to some of the songs of the sea. First, Shenandoah, and then Aroven by the Roger Wagner Chorale. We'll be right back.
You didn't know that, huh?
All right, this is part three of Roger Wagner. Three, two, one. And the music of the Roger Wagner Chorale, two sea shanties on the Capitol label, Shenandoah, and then finally, Aroven. And yes, indeed, Roger Wagner is my very special guest here in the green room tonight here on KXDR. Jonathan Griffith with the Kansas City Chorale is also here. And Jonathan, once again, choral music, those of us in Kansas City who just love this can hear a choral reading or choral performance of the Pirates of Penzance.
That's true. On March 11th, Sunday afternoon at Pembroke Country Day School, the Kansas City Chorale will be doing, we're actually going to do a semi-staged version. We had originally intended just doing a concert version and then decided it's really such a fun show that we're doing it with some costuming and thought it's really something that lends itself quite well to some staging. So we are doing it in a staged form.
Very good. Sunday at Penn Day, that's at 3 o'clock. Are you going to have a sword in your teeth and a sash around your waist then?
And a whip in my hip pocket.
Showmanship.
just in case.
Well, you know, showmanship is so much in choral music, and I'm wondering, Roger Wagner, are you above doing an occasional stunt or two to promote a concert or an album? Something you can share with us here?
If you only knew that when I got back from France studying with Marcel Dupré, and then I studied at the Sorbonne as a philosophy major. I came back here and there was no work. So I became a nightclub entertainer. And I did imitations of Maurice Chevalier. And I did imitations of Bing Crosby and even Joe Penner I could do.
Right now those imitations would be hampered by the fact that you have a cold, but in those days...
I can do a good Chevalier. And I knew him. Because I worked with him in The Merry Widow. I was his understudy for, you know, they put the same clothes on you and then he doesn't have to stand in the heat.
Right, they can get lighting angles.
And all that business. And so that I had the same outfit he did. And he always got a kick watching me do an imitation of him. And that was Jeanette MacDonald and Maurice Chevalier. And then Fifi d'Orsay, who just died 2 weeks ago, did the French version. But I've had... You have no idea. Then I became a dancer at Paramount because when I was doing this nightclub...
Wait a minute, a dancer at Paramount?
2 years, yes. Yeah. Well, it was a mistake.
That's amazing.
It was a mistake. It was under Leroy Prince before he went to Warner's. And I was doing my nightclub act, and the man who wore an orange shirt and a yellow coat and all sorts of... It looked like the rainbow. Sent me a card saying, come and see me. At your break, because I was a pianist and a singer, and I went over there, and his name was Boris Morris, and he was...
Boris Morris.
Yes, and he was the producer and head of the music department of Paramount, and he said, Boyshek, I like your personality, he said to me. I said, I'm glad you like my personality, and he said, I want you should come and see me tomorrow at Paramount. I will sign you to a contract, because what motion picture need is... personality. So I went over there and they signed me up as a musician, singer, actor. And they paid me every week for a month and I never got a call. And finally, one morning I got a call and they said, it was Leroy Prince, said, report to the dance studio tomorrow morning at 9. And I said, I'm not a dancer. He says, oh yes you are. You will be tomorrow. I said, but my contract doesn't stipulate that. He says, that doesn't matter. Come on over. So they got me the most beautiful girls to teach me how to dance.
Well, now, I mean, there are fringe benefits to this.
Many.
Very good.
And it was just about the time Betty Grable was starting out, and unbelievable. She was just a stock girl getting $75 a week, and I was getting $250. And I did quite a bit of picture work. And at the same time, I was the head organist and choir master at the cathedral. So
the reference to dancing is especially interesting, and I'm going to bring in Jonathan Griffith on this, because Jonathan, watching Roger Wagner on the podium, he was constantly in movement.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm curious, as a choral conductor yourself with the chorale, do other choral conductors watch other choral conductors to see their platform techniques?
I think to a degree, yes. Of course we do. It's just natural to follow someone to see exactly how they handle a particular situation.
Well, how would you describe Roger?
I'll tell you what I found fascinating about Roger was in his hand gestures and the fact that it was through the gesture of his hand, there was no wasted movement at all. It was as if playing an instrument, that the choir was an instrument in his hands. And to me, that's the sign of a good conductor, because there was no wasted motion. He wasn't all over the stage. Whatever he did, even in the encore when he clapped his hands, was most appropriate at that particular spot, because it all...
Well, it was dynamic and to the point.
Yes.
Well, thank you. I think the choronomy is the most important thing.
Okay, can we use that word again?
Choronomy, meaning the movement of the hands.
Choronomy.
It's two Greek words, kairos nomos, movement of hands.
Well, I'm learning a lot today.
That's okay.
Wow, okay.
The thing is, to direct the choir with a baton is very bad, because they depend so much upon the expression of the hands. They respond to that. In Gregorian, you've got to use the hands.
Well, now, okay, this brings up another question, if I could interject here. Many times watching an orchestra being conducted, I'll notice that it doesn't seem like very many of the performers are actually watching the conductor. How about that situation with your chorale?
Well, they better watch me. They better watch me, because I'm a very strict disciplinarian at rehearsals, and I don't worry at the performance. I worry at the rehearsals, and we work very hard, and I demand that it be just perfect, or otherwise we won't do it.
What are you like in rehearsals generally? Are you kind of a tyrant?
I used to be much more than I am now. I think that as you get older, you know your trade so well that you get a maximum results with a minimum of effort. When I was younger, I would tear things, throw tenors out of windows, you know, and things like that. I did. I did actually once. I called a necktie tenor a certain name, which he didn't like, and he came at me, and of course I had the upper hand. I threw him out the window. Fortunately, he didn't get too hurt.
Well, I'm still wondering what a necktie tenor is.
It's one who sings like he's got a necktie too tight around his throat.
I had to ask. So to be a disciplinarian, I suppose, then becomes one of the things you have had to learn over the years.
Yes, and now I find that people have so much respect for someone who has accomplished a lot that discipline becomes very easy. Because, you know, they listen to every word you say.
Well, plus there's a lot of advance notice that precedes you.
Yes, that's right. That's right. I was always that way. But the thing is, as I get older, I mean, I don't slow down. I play tennis and golf and everything, and I think my tennis is better now than it was 10 years ago.
Well, had it not been for your cold, you would have been playing tennis with Russell Patterson this morning.
That's right.
So you do keep it up.
That's right. I think that's very important, and there's nothing like conducting to give you condition. Look at a composer's die at the age of 98 or something. You know, it's unbelievable. Klemperer and Stokowski and all of them. The thing is, I'm delighted in here that Jonathan is creating a Kansas City chorale. I think APVE is behind him completely.
That's our next subject, because before we have more music to listen to, we wanted to talk about the APVE. Now, let's say what that is.
Association of Professional Vocal Ensembles.
Now, how does that bring you and Jonathan Griffith together?
Because I'm a founder director of it, okay, with others like Greg Smith, like Margaret Hillis in Chicago, Robert Page in Cleveland. Richard Westenberg wasn't a founder, but he's now on the board with us. He has the Music of Soccer in New York. We have Michael Korn, who has his Philadelphia Singers. I must have forgotten somebody. We now have on the board Paul Hill from Washington.
Yeah. Let me ask Jonathan now at this point, why is this association needed, and what is it going to mean to you?
Well, Roger and I were discussing this earlier before you got here, John, and what we're trying to do is to bring the level of the professional singer comparable to that of the professional musician in your symphony orchestras. And professional music, chorally, has not been as strong up until now. But I think with the Association of Professional Vocal Ensembles and with touring groups such as the Roger Wagner Chorale and then our own Kansas City Chorale, that we are emphasizing the fact that amateur choruses are wonderful, but that professional choruses are as needed as are our professional symphonies, our professional opera companies, and our professional ballet companies. And in order to round out the cultural scene in Kansas City, that it is just as important to have a professional choral ensemble.
Well, this association of, say, chorus and orchestra. Now, let's look back at the Los Angeles Philharmonic, for example.
Yes, well, I have been... They've been using my chorale for 36 years.
And that's the only chorale that is sung with them? Is that still correct?
I think only maybe once or twice they had the Scots chorus.
But traditionally, that's the association.
Oh, yes. They pay them well. But the thing is, people, you see, look upon choruses. It has amateurish overtones. People sing in school. They sing in church. They sing in the bathtub, in the shower. I mean, they think that everybody can sing. And the worst, the most guilty ones, are the managers of orchestras. For instance, I had a big argument with the executive director of the LA Philharmonic, Ernest Fleischman. Really. He said, why don't you get a 100-voice amateur group and we'll give you a good salary? And I said, no, I said, a lot of professional singers are sometimes better musicians than in your orchestra. They come out of Curtis, out of Juilliard. I said, they're tremendous. Background, and these people have a terrible habit of eating, and therefore they have to be paid. You see,
how dare they be so presumptuous?
Do you know that in New York City, recently, my good friend Zubin Mehta directed the New York Philharmonic, he's a music director, and they did the Verdi Requiem, and I think they paid about $75,000 for four outstanding soloists, world famous, to do a couple of performances. They didn't pay a nickel to the chorus. I mean, they used the Westminster Choir, a choir which I trained for 3 years and took on tour even once to prove the point that you don't need a union to tour and you don't need a union to be a professional.
Gosh, Jonathan, I'm wondering if you've ever decided to take up another line of work with this kind of salary scale. Is this situation all too typical in your own experience, however?
Yes, it is. It is very typical for a symphony orchestra to use an amateur chorus as opposed to a professional chorus just because of finances,
right.
Monetarily. That's basically what it comes down to. However, I would like to say that Russell Patterson and myself have had discussions about including the chorale next spring in the celebration of the 300th year of Bach, and that we're going to do a couple of series of Bach cantatas with a chamber-sized group from the symphony. And I think that's a step in the right direction. And we are trying to get ourselves financially on the ground. And I know the symphony is also trying to do the same thing. But we want to emphasize the fact that we have our own subscription series concerts. And there really is no other professional choir around in the area that has its own subscription series concerts. But we also do other performances besides that. We perform all over the city, and you've been to some of those performances.
Roger, you've been listening to all of this. Is this typical of what you find in many of the major metropolitan areas around the country or not?
Yes, with exceptions. In Chicago, Margaret has a symphony chorus. Well, of course, that's financed by the symphony. We are on our own in Los Angeles, but we have help from the Performing Arts Council. In other words, there are three or four groups that belong to the Philharmonic, the Jeffrey Ballet, ourselves, and the theater. And we raise $6-7 million a year through that fund, and they give us a portion of that, small portion. And the rest we do with tickets, and we do with grants, National Endowment for the Arts in Washington, where I served for 8 years on the panel. And we review all of these courses. When I argued with the executive director in Los Angeles, I said, why don't you use some amateurs in your orchestra? He says, that's different. I said, well, it's different because you make it different. I said, people pay $15, $18 a seat, deserve to hear the very best, and there's no amateur chorus that can be as good as a good professional chorus with the right direction, because it makes sense that a man who sings every day and studies every day and does nothing but that is better than one who sings once a week.
You know, even in the arts, or should I say, especially in the arts, you've got to be tough about these ambitions. To do it right,
right,
you've got to be tough. And I'll tell you what's really tough is to admit that we are about out of time. We have just enough time to remind everybody, the Pirates of Penzance with the Kansas City Chorale in costume. Jonathan will be there, swashing and buckling his way through that performance, March 11, Sunday, at PEM Day at 3 o'clock. And we've been talking most recently now about the APVE, which brings, in a sense, you and Roger Wagner together. And I want to thank you most especially for helping me arrange this interview today.
My pleasure.
Now, let's talk more music. Roger Wagner, we're going to be coming up on some music from Catula Burana, but the recording we will be hearing represents something very special in the career of
Catuli,
the chorale.
It's Catuli Carmina. It's a trilogy, which is made up of Carmina Burana, Catuli Carmina Triumfa.
Sound like extras in a Fox 40s musical or something.
Yeah, when I got the Grammy Award for Catuli Carmina, I got a beautiful letter from Karl Orff asking me to come to Germany to conduct some of his works. And, of course, wonderful. I was booked for a year and a half. I went to see him in Munich. He died, you know, last year, I think. And he was very sweet, and he wanted me to conduct Die Kluge. I think it was a new thing he had just written. He says, you have the temperament for my music.
All right. So, gosh, it would take another half hour to wonder what that means, I suppose. Now, what album is the Catula from that we'll be hearing?
The Catula Carmina is from the Virtuoso, which got the Grammy Award. We did a lot of other things. I arranged for Girls' Voices, the Mozart Alleluia. We did quite a few things.
But it's called Virtuoso, correct?
Yes, Virtuoso, because it's music that most choirs couldn't perform.
Now, this is a digital recording we're going to be hearing, and I just want to let our listeners out there know that although you cannot find these recordings in record stores, you can obtain them on your own. A little initiative and a postal stamp will do it. And here's an address I'm going to have you write down. I'll repeat it when we come back after the music. Write to Dick Wagner, Executive Director of Wagner Enterprises, Inc. Wagner Enterprises, Inc., 5930 Penfield Avenue, Woodland Hills, California. Now, hang on for the zip. 91367-5699. And I'll repeat that after we come back. Right now, what orchestra are you with?
What orchestra am I with? You mean in this?
Yes.
Oh, this is the Capitol Orchestra, which I used before I founded my Symphony Orchestra in Los Angeles.
So this is the Catula Carmina.
Yes.
With the Roger Wagner Chorale. And let's give a listen right now. Okay, coming up on cut 6 of Roger Wagner. 3, 2, 1. We've been listening to Catula Carmina by Karl Orff, the Roger Wagner Chorale, and this was a digital label. This has been remastered from the original catalog.
That's right, yes.
And again, that address where you can obtain these recordings, write to Dick Wagner, Executive Director of Wagner Enterprises, Inc., 5930 Penfield Avenue, Woodland Hills, California. And hang on to your hats. Here's the zip. 91367-5699. I'll try and have this address with the announcer who follows me. So if you have questions and want to call in. While we're talking about information, Jonathan Griffith, the ticket situation now for the Pirates of Penzance is Sunday, 3 o'clock, PEM day. How can you obtain tickets?
Tickets are available at the Jones Store and also Classical Westport and the Tune Shop in Prairie Village. And I think the greatest means of showing support for any type of organization is attendance at concerts. And I think the attendance at last night's concert, there was a full house in the music hall for Roger Wagner, shows that choral music is definitely alive and well, especially in Kansas City. We'd like to see the same people come to our concert.
Roger Wagner, I can only hope that that is as gratifying to you as your performance was to us.
Well, it is certainly gratifying. You couldn't ask for more. Thank you so much. It's been a very pleasant experience.
Well, you're a real trooper, cold and all. You've agreed to appear at our microphones, and I appreciate it very much.
I hope to be back.
Jonathan Griffith, always a pro. You helped out with this interview. I can't thank you enough.
My pleasure, John. Thank you.
We'll see you Sunday.
Yes.
And this is John Tibbetts in the Green Room. Tune in again next week here on KXTR. More special guests, more backstage chat about the arts here in Kansas City. I'll talk to you then.